in my trailer, and it says how to succeed with money, or how to make your money succeed. And I didn't read that book for a long time, and I discovered you cannot judge a book by its cover. That's oftentimes been said. It's very true. You cannot do that. You cannot judge a class by its title. Christian Finances is really kind of a off-the-cuff title. So I thought I might change it. So I did change it last week to The Christian and His Money. And this morning I thought, well, maybe I can attract more people in competition with Stuart. Really, there is no competition, you understand. But I thought I might change it. What could I call it? And I thought up a whole bunch of different names, God and the Money Market and stuff like that. And then I decided that all that was too carnal, so I came back to The Christian and God's Money. Now, what we're basically doing is looking at attitudes. We're not concerned with how much you have or how much you don't have or how much you give. Giving is really a very small facet of it, though it is a very important subject. But it's mostly attitudes toward money and how to use the money that God has entrusted us with, little or much, and use it for God's glory and God's gain. And so I think it has really very, very little to do with whether you feel you have totally succeeded with your money or not. Some of you, I'm sure, have got it all together and could speak with a lot of authority. And if you should be in this class and you do have things fairly well put together, we need your input. But we can use you, so I just hope that you will understand that we're not really trying to classify people into rich and poor and condemn the rich and justify the poor or anything like that. We're just looking mostly at attitudes and how to be good stewards of what God has given us.
Stuart is here, by the way.
Specifically, this is aimed at encouraging older folks to not give up. Okay? That's what it's all about. And I have quite a few points to show that you're growing older, which we don't have to really realize. But the first one is you become forgetful. And the second one is that when you get up in the morning and you hear snap, crackle, and pop, it's not your cereal. And the third one is, I forget. So you know what you're going to get.
I thought a word of prayer. Father, this morning as we come before you, we quite recognize the fact that we are dealing with holy things, contrary to what some of us may have even thought. Father, we want to know what your word says about this important area of our life, an inescapable area of our life, dealing with material things while in a material world. But Father, we want to thank you that you have given us guidance and you've given us instruction, and it's impossible for us in these 4 days to even more than scratch the surface. But I just pray, Lord, that you will guide us into what's going to be profitable for the most of us people here, and that we'll all be enriched and blessed, and that we'll have a good time doing this as we work through these things together. In Jesus' name we ask it. Amen. I thought a good title for this might be Family Fun. I lost my list when I got up, so I forgot what some of my new titles were going to be. Wouldn't that be a good one for a series on financial concepts? Family Fun, because I really believe that it can be fun. I really believe that working with your family finances can be a lot of fun, but oftentimes it isn't. Or maybe I thought of one like winning without dollars. That'd be good. How can you win without dollars in this world? Well, you can. And then I thought God's Money Market was a classic. That one just kind of hit me. I'm like, hey, that'd be a good one. But I think it'd be offensive to so many people that I decided I'd better not go with that one. So I think we'll just stay with the one that we started out with, and that is The Christian and God's Money. Now, there'll be times when things go cattywampus up here on the screen. So you'll have to just sort of signal to me that you can't read what's up there. The Christian and God's Money. That screen is crooked. That's
or my machine's crooked.
I think if you get this concept firmly fixed in your mind, that what you have, and when we're talking about money, we're not talking about dollars and cents only. We are talking about material things, material possessions. We're talking about your house. We're talking about your car. We're even talking about your kids. We're talking about your bank account. We're talking about your credit. We're talking about your debts. I hope you don't have any of those. We're talking about all kinds of things. But since money is the medium of exchange or the medium of barter, we'll be using the word money quite a bit, won't we? But I think if you get a hold of this concept at the beginning and keep working on it all through the week, that we'll get some benefit from this class. And I know that this will have to be one of them, and that is that whatever you have, whatever you say is yours, or whatever you possess, you don't own. You get that? Whatever you possess, you don't own. It isn't yours. It's on loan to you. It's borrowed from God. God has entrusted it to you. So whether it's much or whether it's little, really is of no consequence as far as I'm concerned. It's being able to handle whatever God has entrusted us with. It's God's money. Okay? Good. Class dismissed. You all got the point. One of the things, three of the things probably that we're going to cover this week is, number one, how to obtain it. Number two is how to use it as God's stewards. Number three, attitudes toward material possessions. And we're probably going to start with the third one first, and I think we'll probably spend most of our time, actually the majority of our time, on that one, because those of you who have heard me speak very much know that I work real heavy on a little, I don't know what you call it, it's just a little thing. It goes like this: attitudes or thoughts, because thoughts are attitudes related. Attitudes determine action. Think about that one for a second. Everything that you do is a product of your thinking. There isn't a thing that's ever been done in this world but what it started with a seed thought. The largest building, the Sears Tower in the world, started with a thought in somebody's mind. That's where it had its roots. So attitudes or thinking is very, very crucial, because attitudes determine action. Then what do we do with actions? We repeat those. When you repeat an action often enough, and sometimes it doesn't take very often, it becomes a habit. These folks are from Oskaloosa. They've got the answers. You've heard this before. Actions become habits. Habits are not wrong. Wrong habits are wrong. Good habits are good. And we are creatures of habit. Just check yourself out through a day and see what you do each day of the week. And we are really creatures of habit. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that we need to be sure that our habits are right ones. Habits become your lifestyle. Now you're down to the bottom line. Our lifestyle is the way we live, day after day and day after day. So it's very important to have the right attitude toward material things so that we can have the right actions and develop the right plans so that we can have the right lifestyle. Now, if the real truth were known in this company, some of us have got a lifestyle that really doesn't need much adjustment as far as our usage of money is concerned. Some of us probably could use a little help. If you're going to get any help this week, you're not going to get it from me. You're going to get it in spite of me. You're going to get it from God and from His Word. And I'm not here to give you the answers. I am not a financier. God has entrusted us with some material possessions along the way. Most people think of preachers as being poor. Well, I don't consider myself to be a poor preacher. Not in finances or any other way. Wait a minute now. I know what you're saying. I got the point. I wasn't talking about my ability to communicate. I was talking about what God has entrusted us with. God has entrusted us with more money than what most preachers are supposed to have handled. It was said of one preacher, God keep you humble, we'll keep you poor. Well, a lot of people have lived by that philosophy, all right, but not toward us. God has been good to us, and He's always taken care of our needs. So I'm not talking to you from a perspective of being one who has been really through the mill, and I've made all kinds of mistakes. We have made our share of mistakes. I'm not talking to you as one who has got it all made and who has got all kinds of success. I'm not coming at to you at all with that, because most of you, or several of you, have got a lot more input in that than I have. All I want to do is lay out some biblical principles, and then I do want you to make some contribution to those principles as far as the practical application of them is concerned. I'm a Bible teacher. I'm not a financier. I'm not a financial advisor. This is the first time. Last week was the first time I ever even took this up as a series, and I was scared spitless last week. I'm not going to tell you how scared I am this week. Okay. Let me say just a couple of other things that hopefully it'll help you to understand that this is going to be a fun class, interesting, and yet serious. Money problems, and there are some who have those, not everybody, are symptoms of deeper problems. Often, more often than not, a money problem is not the problem. It is a symptom of a problem. If I have a headache today, that probably isn't the problem. That is a symptom of a problem. Medical profession usually are dealing with symptoms and not causes. At least many of them do. I go to the doctor and he deals with my symptoms and gets me over my headache, but he oftentimes doesn't deal with my basic problem. I have a pinched sciatic nerve. Well, I had a doctor treat me. As long as he was treating me, my sciatic nerve pressure was released and I felt pretty good. Since the doctor went away from camp, my sciatic problems are all back, because he did the best he could, but he really didn't get to the problem because it's still there. Same thing is true with finances. The real problem of finances is our relationship to God. It's a spiritual problem, folks. You see, the problem that we have had all through years is that we have thought of our finances, our material things, as being our own and not a spiritual thing at all. And that's totally wrong. Your finances or your money or your material things are as much a part of your spiritual life as the time you spend in prayer. And that's a pretty strong statement, but it is. I think when we talk about this being a spiritual problem, we're down to what we call lordship. My question is Jesus Christ Lord of your material possessions? Is He Lord of your finances? That's the question I think that we need to face very, very honestly and seriously. Is He Lord of my time? Is He Lord of other dimensions of my life? But don't leave out, is He Lord of my material possessions? Well, He wants to be, He is, and He's worthy of that trust. Another thing we need to understand at the outset of this is that we need to understand that man's basic nature is sin. Now, that's a concept that we've heard over and over again, but I think it fits in very well here as introductory remarks. Man's basic nature is sin, and the identifying sin is greed. Man's basic nature is greed. And I think it showed up in the Garden of Eden. Satan seemed to know exactly what to appeal to Eve with. How did he appeal to Eve? He showed her something she wasn't supposed to have. That's where the greed picture comes in. Show me something that I'm not supposed to have, then I'm going to want it. Haven't you mothers experienced that with your kids? Set that cherry pie out there and tell them it's for dinner when Grandpa and Grandma comes over. Turn your back. and a piece of it is gone. Or at least there's a fingerprint in it somewhere. That's because you said you aren't to have that. And that greed nature began to activate itself, and pretty soon it overcame. Well, that's where we are basically as human beings. We are people with a sinful greed nature. During this week, we're going to be handling such words as financial success, financial security. Now, don't throw your shoes at me yet. Financial bondage, financial freedom. Are these proper words for Christians to use? That will be one of the questions that we'll throw out. Is it right for a Christian to think of financial success? And there's going to be a variety of opinion here. In fact, we could get a good hot one going on things like that. Financial security, is there such a thing? Last week I put up the word on the screen, already had it written out, and one of my titles for that particular morning was Financial Freedom. And the guy sitting right up here in the front row said, that's a lie. Well, I got it on the screen, so I'm going to use it. And he said it nicely. He didn't say it sarcastically or ugly. But I asked him why he felt it was that way. And then we found out that we were coming from two different perspectives. Definition of terms. What he thought of as financial freedom was not what I was thinking of as financial freedom. And in the interpretation of his meaning of the word, he was right. In the interpretation of my meaning of the word, I was right. Now, the reason I'm saying this, folks, is let's don't get hot and bothered about issues where we start letting the temperatures rise inside over something that we don't agree with, because we are dealing with a very, very sensitive subject. It's extremely sensitive, especially to some people. And it isn't an easy subject for me to deal with that many people sitting out here looking holes through me. It's not easy. And I don't want us to become conflicting, argumentative, or anything. Because last week I almost became the referee of a wrestling match. Two people began to cross each other, and I said, wait a minute now, we're going to leave that one. We're going to go on. Stop it. And I'll do the same thing with you if you do it this week. You're safer if you keep your comments directed toward me. If you keep your comments directed toward me, then I'll handle them or do the best I can. If you get your comments directed toward each other, you're going to hurt somebody, right? I've had this experience over and over again with marriage counseling. When two people come in who have had marriage conflicts, one of my first laws that I set down is, everything that is said to me, not to each other. You've been talking to each other for the last 10 years and you haven't resolved anything. So you're going to talk to me now and the other person's going to listen. And then we'll give you equal time, right? Well, that's one of my first laws today, is that you talk to us or to me, and then we'll work it out. And if it's something that we feel is too sensitive, too controversial, we'll just pass on to something else. The area that we were really finding sensitive last week was in the area of investments. A lot of different opinions were coming out, and there is we don't try to settle these things. We're not here to try to settle conflicts or try to change anybody's mind on anything. All we want to do is try to get a broad perspective. I really think when we're dealing with finances and material things, that God has set down guidelines. And I believe that God's principles are wide. I think oftentimes God's principles and His guidelines are wider in most areas than what we want to allow God. We narrow them in to our own thinking. So that if you don't think like I think, you're wrong. That's my definition of a mistake. I told Ken Miller, who was the director for camp last week, I said, Ken, you're going to make some mistakes because you're not going to do everything like I do it. That's what a mistake is. Now, you know there's sarcasm in that, but there's more truth in sarcasm sometimes. If you don't do it just the way I have done it, or the way I want it done, or the way I think it should be done, it's a mistake. Now, in this handling of material things and discussing it, we need to remember that there's the principles of God's Word, and they are set, they are defined. There's no question about them. But between these guidelines, there's a lot of freedom. And that freedom is going to vary according to one individual's circumstances or another one. There's going to be some people out here in this vast audience who are going to say, I don't believe in any form of savings. It's wrong. There's others of us who are going to say, I do believe in some form of savings. Well, I'm not at all sure, but what? There isn't room for both. In some cases, there isn't any room. You don't need it. In some cases, it's very wise. And I'll give you illustrations of that if we get around to that. But, okay, so let's go on. We're going to be talking about things like that. Unbalanced thinking leads to unbalanced money management. So really, the most probably that we want to do here is to try to just get some balanced thinking. Now let's talk about attitudes just for a minute. I want to lay some more foundational work here, though. The importance of the subject. I am so glad. I don't know how many people went over to Stuart's class. I feel like he might have poor attendance this week. He had a good attendance last week. Maybe not so many this week, but I hope there's a nice showing over there. I think there probably is. But I'm glad also to see so many people here. This spring in Willowbrook Camp, back up in Iowa, I instigated a financial seminar at Willowbrook Camp in the month of May. I sent out from our office letters to all the assemblies in Iowa, all the assemblies in the border of Iowa, assemblies close to Iowa. We sent out letters announcing this, made a nice brochure announcing it, did up a nice display, and sent it to over half of the churches in the city of Des Moines, because Willowbrook Camp is right on the edge of the city of Des Moines, right within the city limits. And we sent this to all the fundamental churches in Des Moines. We put it on the radio. After it was all said and done, I said, I don't know what we could do else to advertise this seminar. And I said, man, this camp is going to be flooded with people. We won't know what to do with them. We'll be having to set up a big circus tent in order to get all these clowns in. And the day came. Free, no charge, the day came. Oh, I should tell you, I did not conduct a seminar. I only managed it and got it going. We flew a CPA in who's got more letters behind his name than President Reagan. Very adequate. A born-again Christian, an elder of an assembly, but a very, very successful man in financial planning and financial counseling. Now, I know you're just wanting to hear why am I saying all this. You think we had a big crowd? You know how many people we had? Top 32. Boy, I tell you, I have been boggling my mind ever since. What was wrong? What didn't we do right? And I asked the class last week, I said, why didn't we have interest? Some people said, well, maybe poor timing. Well, it probably had something to do with it. Somebody said, well, maybe you charged too much. I said, no, it was free. I don't know why we didn't create interest. I don't know. I'm not being sarcastic or ugly or critical of any of you who got the letter and didn't come. Maybe I am. But I really am at a loss to know. So I said, well, maybe it's because people... In evangelical churches, you have to eliminate the assemblies because the folks from the evangelical churches didn't come either. The Bible churches, the Baptist churches, we invited them all. They didn't come either. And we made it plain in our brochure that this was not related to a local church. It was not a local church program. It was open for anybody to come who was interested in financial concepts. Well, at best, 32 people, and we had tremendous material. Some people are not acquainted with the fact that there are over 1,000 Bible references in both the Old and the New Testament. In fact, there is more spoken in the Bible about finances and material related things than any other subject except love. It's the only subject in the Bible that there's more said about, both Old and New Testament, than love. Finances is next. Another kind of brazen, scary statistic is that they tell us that among Christians, 92% of the divorces that are taking place today are caused by money-related matters. Now, this is where I have no joke, folks. If this is even close, this is serious stuff. We're all concerned about the breakdown of divorce, of the family. And do you know that in some places today, statistics are showing us that there are more divorces among Christians than there is even among the other people in the community? That's scary and serious. Well, you're supposed to be able to read through me. My wife says she can. I'm duty bound to this thing here. That's my problem, but I'll try to duck out of the way a little bit. Ladies' Home Journal. This is not Bible, but their poll said 70% of our worries are about money. You can agree with that or disagree with it, whichever you want to, but it's worth thinking about. Well, we're going to talk about right and wrong concepts of values. Some right attitudes. We've already said this one. I am a steward. I've got a lot of scriptures on my subject, and I'm not going to have time to look at all of them, so I notice most of you, or many of you, are taking notes. That's good. Write these scriptures down so that you can refer to them. But what you're going to see by looking at the first one from Luke 16, 10 to 12, and 1 Chronicles 29, 11 to 12, and that is the thing that we've already emphasized, you are not an owner, you are a steward. What is the one requirement of a steward that the Bible says? Faithful. It's required of a student that he be found faithful. Let's go in our Bibles to 1 Timothy chapter 6 right now. We'll spend a little time in 1 Timothy 6, so you'll want to open to that. First Timothy 6 and verse 6 to 10. We're looking for an attitude here. My Bible says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out." Pretty familiar language, but strong impact. You brought nothing into this world. You didn't even come into this world clad in a diaper. That's the first thing they had to do, is put clothes on you. And when you leave, they put your nicest suit on you, but it decays with your body and you take nothing out. The only thing is that you can send things ahead, but you take nothing out. One fellow was buried in a gold coffin, and somebody stood by the graveside and said, "Man, that's life." Contradiction of terms, isn't it? Verse 8. "And having food and raiment, let us therewith be content." Attitudes, remember, we're looking for. "They that will be rich fall into temptation and snare, and many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows." What would you suggest at least one attitude from those verses could be? Okay, be content. Contentment is found in 1 Timothy 6, is found in Philippians 4. The apostle said that he had learned. Now I want you to notice this. It says that he had learned to be content in whatever state he is. That means that when a young lady gets married and moves out of Iowa into the state of Missouri, she's to be content in whatever state she's in. That's the very practical interpretation of that. That's the BK version. Whatever state you're in, you're to be content. But I know you understand better than that. Paul is really talking seriously about being content, whatever his circumstances are. I've got a question for you. Don't raise your hand, don't blink your eyes or shake your head. But are you really content with the situation as it is today? Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't set goals, and that doesn't mean that you shouldn't look for an improvement program if improvement is necessary or desirable. I'm not saying that we should not look for some improvement, or maybe in some cases a better job, which we don't have too much to choose from today. But are you content with what the Lord has given you? If you have, he says, contentment with godliness is great gain. Hebrews 13:5 speaks about contentment. Another surprising attitude we find from verse 17 of 1 Timothy 6 is enjoyment. You mean it's really all right for me as a Christian to enjoy material things? Or am I supposed to look at those with a holy frown on my face? I like what Howard Hendricks says about enjoyment of life. He says, some people think that God up in heaven is looking over the banister and he's looking down on us Christians down here and he's saying, are you having a good time? And we say, well, yeah. He says, well, quit it. God is not depriving us of a good time in life. The Bible speaks about having joy, fun, loving life. There's a biblical expression where he actually says, they that will love life. I think it's spiritual for us to love life. And I think it's okay for us to enjoy some of the things that God gives to us, providing, of course, it's all under control and in proper perspective. God does not deny me enjoyment of physical things if I can afford them. Ephesians 4 and 28. He said, let him that stole steal no more. Now that's the admonition for all of you thieves out here. Don't do that anymore. That's what he's saying. If that's the way you were doing in the past, quit it. To use Howard's strong emphasis. Quit it. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him what? Work. Labor. Let him labor. Why? To build financial security? What does the verse say? How many of you know what the verse says without reading it? Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor so that he may have to give. We're not going to be saying an awfully lot about giving. We'll hold that for another year, but I want to tell you, you can't avoid the subject of money and finances and material things and not touch on the subject of giving, because God puts such a prominent emphasis on giving. Another thing about attitudes is be sure that whatever you have, from Deuteronomy 18, 17 to 18, be sure that whatever you have, little, much, anywhere in between, make sure that you give God the credit for that. When you start thinking any credit to yourself, that I am financially successful because I am so smart, or if you begin taking credit on the basis of this, I am financially successful because I am spiritual, forget it. Forget it. You have absolutely no authority to say that you are spiritual because you are financially successful. Some of the most unspiritual Christians in the world are the people who have the most dollars and cents, at least the dollars. That is not a criteria. So give God the credit. If God gives you the ability to get up in the morning and pack your lunch bucket and go to work, thank him for that. Somehow or other, we look down on people who make a living out of their dinner bucket. Hey, if a person is in the will of God, going to the factory and grinding away at that old machine for 40 hours a week, and he's in God's will, he's just as spiritual and just as blessed and can be happier than the people in the White House. He could be a lot happier. I don't know how difficult that would be to be happier than that. Because I don't know how happy or unhappy people in the White House are. I know there are some Christians in the White House, and we thank God for that. Okay, we give credit to God. Now let's go to 1 Timothy 6 and analyze three classes of people that are found there. The first one are those who are not rich. Now, I should tell you that one thing you have to do in order to stay in this class is to identify which of these three classes you're in. And I'll guarantee you, you won't be back tomorrow if I do that. So I guess I won't do that. There are three classes of people found in 1 Timothy 6. Those who are not rich. Don't put up your hands. Probably all of you would put up your hands. Verse 6 to 8. He is saying godliness plus contentment equals great gain. There's no stigma toward not being financially wealthy or having great material possessions. There is absolutely nothing wrong with being a day-by-day laborer. And thank God each morning that you can get up and go to work, because Let me just say in the context of that, how many times have you ever heard people say, oh, if Eve just hadn't blown it in the garden, I wouldn't have to go to work today. Or if Adam hadn't been so stupid as to eat that apple, I wouldn't have to work so hard. That's not true. Do you know that God put Adam and Eve to work before sin ever came in? Now, sure, they had to contend with problems after sin came in, but God gave them the job. He says, before sin ever came, He says, here's the garden. You dress it, you keep it, you multiply, you take care of it. God gave them the keys of the whole planet Earth. And they're a little part of it at that time. He said, here it is, you go to work. And then, of course, Eve blew it after that. And Eve is to blame, I want you ladies to know. I'm not the second Adam or the last Adam, but I am an Adam. Blame the woman. Those who are not rich, if you're godly and you're content, that's great gain. And that great gain thing there, you can't put a dollar sign on that. You can't put figures to that. I think you understand what the Spirit of God is saying. What about those who are not rich but wish they were? Now let's have a show of hands. Oh boy, that would be embarrassing, wouldn't it? How many of us would really like to admit that we're not rich, but we sure would like to be? There are no hands. Don't want to embarrass you. What about those? What does he say to those? Now look. Verse. They that would be rich. I lost it. Verse 5? Verse 9. But they that will be rich, what's the warning for them? They fall into temptation and a snare. It is not how much you have, it's what your attitudes are toward material things. And you can be just as money conscious and money bound, not having it and wishing you had it and struggling to get it. We have a fellow in Oskaloosa who a few years ago started a business there, Farm and Home Store. You know what the man said? And he's a professing Christian. I doubt very much if he really is saved. That's my own opinion. He said, I'm going to be this town's millionaire as many times over as it has to be in order to be the richest man in Oskaloosa. He would be rich. Did he fall into any snares? Oh, you better believe it. Any temptations? Oh, yes. His whole concept of this thing was distorted. You know what happened to his business? It went kaflunk. He lost it all. Now, there's nothing wrong with being an insurance salesman, but that's what he's doing now. And I don't think that most people who are insurance salesmen are expecting to get fabulously rich. It's a way of making a living, but it isn't an easy way of making a living in our competitive day, I would assume. I don't know of too many people who are fabulously rich selling insurance. If they are, they probably got it some other way. It's hard work, but that's what he's doing. And there's nothing wrong with that. Watch out for those who want to get rich and have attitudes toward greed just as much or more than other people who may be very rich. And then he goes to verse 17, isn't it? Charge them that are rich. Now let's see the show of hands. We are rich. Now I don't mean spiritually rich. We're not talking about that aspect of it right this moment. We're talking about people who really take inventory and, man, the figures are looking good with lots of commas between the zeros. What did he say to those who are rich? Well, he says, I have a little warning for you. What is the warning? Well, look at verse 17, or instructions, rather. He says, I have a warning, too. But I have instructions for you. Those who are rich, he says, now, be careful at least about three things. Don't become conceited. Do you see that? Verse 17. Charge them that are rich in this age that they be not high-minded. There's something here that I think needs to be said about attitudes toward riches. I have heard it said, I have heard it preached. I know that there are those who feel very strongly that if you are rich, you shouldn't be. You should give it all away and just live by faith. Give it all away. Any of you have ever heard something similar to that? And there are some people, bless their hearts, who have done that. They have hardly anything in the way of material possessions, and they sleep on hard floors and so forth. Now, I don't see that the Bible says that anywhere. I have a problem with that. What is he saying to those who are rich? He's not saying, get rid of all your money, get rid of all your possessions. If you do that, you won't have anything to be a steward of anymore. I am a steward of the house that we live in Oshkosh. That's God's house. I tried to burn it down. He said no. He says, I want you to be a steward of that house. All right? There's a travel trailer out there. Not bad. Pretty nice. I'm a steward of that. God has entrusted us with that trailer because he saw that we had a need for it. Now, I don't know if we will always have a need for it, but up to the present time, my wife and I agree that we have a need for the trailer, so we are stewards of that trailer. That's God's trailer. I don't know why I was saying that. What was I saying? We're stewards of that. That's what I was saying. Don't be conceited. Don't become proud of anything that you have. We've said enough about that. Don't trust it for security. Watch out for this stuff called financial security. Make sure you understand the terminology before you use the word. Because in a sense, there is no financial security. I know what I was saying a minute ago. I was talking about people who say you've got to get rid of everything. This verse in 17 says, charge them that are rich. He says nothing about getting rid of it. He says, tell them how to have right attitudes. And what are the right attitudes? Don't be conceited. Don't think you're better than somebody else because you've got more than somebody else has got. That's a dangerous thing. Don't suppose that because you've got more than somebody else, you ought to be the elder in your assembly. Don't suppose that because you have got more than somebody else, that that gives you a handle of power over them. The Bible teaches against that. Don't trust money for security. Be a generous person. Look what you can do with those finances, with those material things that God has given to you. Right attitudes. Those are just a few. I'm going to leave you a little time for questions and comments, hopefully more comments than questions, after a minute. How does God use money? Why shouldn't we give it all away? If we give all of our money away, if you've got teeny millions and you give them all away, then somebody else has got to be responsible for it. So you may as well be responsible for it. And I'm not saying you shouldn't give it away, but I want you to see that God can use money. And here are just a few of the ways in which God can actually use money. He uses money to demonstrate his provision. Philippians chapter 4. Paul was off in Thessalonica. Communication was slow in those days. He wrote to the church at Philippi in Philippians 4, and he says, I want to thank you for that gift that you sent down to me. I think that gift was one that we would call dollars and cents. He received that gift. And he says, I really thank you for it. And he was appreciative of the gift because it was God's way of demonstrating to Paul that he could provide. Another thing that God can do with money, he can use it to prove our trustworthiness. Luke chapter 16 and verse 11 says that if God can't trust you with little stuff like money, and whether it's $100 or $100,000, if God can't trust you with it, he says, then how do you suppose that God could trust you with important stuff? Not meaning by that money isn't important, again. But I mean things that are really important, spiritual things. How can God trust you as a leader in your family, as a father and a husband, if you can't be trusted in handling those finances? How can God trust you with a Sunday school class of kids that are going to follow your example? And remember that when you take any kind of public leadership, it's not the words that you say that are going to be remembered. It's the actions that you do. It's the lifestyle that you live. It's what the kids see. They don't remember much of what we say, but they sure do remember what we do in front of them and how we demonstrate before them. So how's God going to entrust the lives of some kids to me in a Sunday school or young people's class or my own children if I don't prove myself trustworthy and able to handle dollars and cents and material things? Another thing you can do with money is that in 2 Corinthians chapter 8:24, you can prove your love to the Lord. Isn't that great? I mean, this is where I see the fun part of this. I can actually take my material possessions and I can prove to the Lord that I love Him by giving of my finances and my material possessions. That's why I said a while ago, this is really a spiritual matter, not just a carnal thing. Money can be used to promote unity among believers. Which way?
They're trying to take notes, by the way, they can't see
them. But I want, taking notes, I appreciate that you do that. And I'll uncover any notes that you want just in a moment here. To promote unity among believers, Acts 11, 27 to 30. Some Christians in one part of the world had heard that Christians in another part of the world were suffering, and what did they do? They said, well, let's send those people some, what? We'll send them some spiritual messages. We'll send them some tapes. No, they said, we'll send them some money. That's what they need. They don't need sermons. They don't even need a preacher. They don't need Bible schools at this point. They need some money. They need help. There's a famine in their land. And the Christians over in one part of the world sent that financial, hardcore stuff over to those Christians in the other part of the world, and it was a spiritual ministry. What's it do to Christians? It unifies them. Has your assembly ever, or your local church ever sent a gift to some place in the world, Bangladesh, or some place in the world where there was a famine, or where there were hardships, or where people had been wiped out with floods and storms? Maybe it wasn't in another part of the world. Maybe it was right close in your own community. I have a real confession to make to you folks. Can I stand in confession box here for a minute? I have been looking, Terry will support me in this, I have been looking at how badly our own local church responded to those storm victims when that storm came through and wiped many, many farms and people right out of their homes. If it ever happens again, I hope we're better prepared for that, because our deacons and elders have sat and looked at that thing and said, hey, we didn't do our job. Now, I don't mean to say we didn't do anything. We sent money to the Red Cross. We had a food gathering. No, it wasn't food. It was clothes and appliances. We had a gathering, and a lot of people responded. We sent that to them. But I don't think in proportion we did our job. That's just an honest confession. Not trying to appear humble about it. I'm just saying I really don't think. Don't you feel that way, Terry, that we failed? We're hoping that we are better organized and able to evaluate needs and do something the next time it happens, because next time it could be our own home. Could hit right where Terry and I live. Hope not, but love your neighbor better than yourself. Huh? Well, it does promote a tremendous amount of unity, because there were Christians who don't come to the Bible Truth Chapel in Oskaloosa that if we had got in there and helped, it might have had some real impact on them. Huh? And I did notice that some of the other churches took care of their own people. It didn't happen to be that any of the Christians from our assembly was involved in the storm. One family from another assembly was involved in a way, and we did try to evaluate the needs there a little bit, but we were kind of late and didn't do too much about it. To meet the needs that arise, what can you do with finances? Well, look what they did when it was time to build the tabernacle. People didn't just bring dollars and cents. They brought materials that they had sewn, they brought fabrics, they brought precious things, and they just flooded the market. It was so much so that they had to say, quit giving. Man, how many of you have ever had a time in your local church when you put up your hand and said, folks, stop it. We've got too much. You folks are giving too liberally. Quit it. Well, that's what they had to do back in the days of the tabernacle and the temple, didn't it? They actually had more than they knew what to do with. Well, we haven't had that trouble at our chapel, I'll tell you that. You know what we've had to say to the people of our chapel? Confession box again. For the size of the church, our giving is way down in comparison to the size of other churches equal size. We happen to know something of the budget of other churches in town that are the same size as we are. And we happen to know, because some of our deacons are men out of those churches and they were on the budget board or the finance committee or whatever. And our giving is sometimes about a third of what theirs is. Now that isn't any credit to us, is it? That's no credit to anybody when our giving is down like that. Now, of course, you've got to take into consideration that There are people without jobs, and there are people who don't have big incomes and all the rest, but surely other churches must have that too. I'm only saying that not to threaten us or scold us, but just to say sometimes Christians are not very good stewards of their money. And one thing that we would like to do in these sessions is just encourage us to see how much God can use these material things and how we can be good stewards of them so that we can meet God's approval. Okay, now I'd like just to throw it open for the next 4 minutes to questions or input.
I just want to comment about stewardship as far as having possessions and making them available. I think it's a concept that people have written about, the living community or whatever, and I'm not endorsing that. I'm just going to say what we are doing is one item. I have a pickup, and I make it available, and I don't discern between Christians and non-Christians. I mean, but I'm real careful who I do lend it to. I mean, if we are stewards of that, I want to make that trust available again the next time. And if I feel that somebody is not responsible, I'm not going to lend them that trust, and I don't feel like I'm not loving. I'll make myself available with the trust, but I'm not going to just turn the trust loose to anybody. I do show discernment, but I, as far as it's still mine to have stewardship over, it isn't mine and it's only mine that I do use it for other people and I let other people use it. That's just one example of how we can use our possessions.
Thank you. What he's saying, if I can just put it back into my own language, and if I'm not saying it right, he's saying we use our stewardship with a great deal of discernment. And that's a very, very important thing. Very important to use your stewardship with discernment. Discernment. Spiritual discernment, folks. Don't miss it. Yes.
This is a curiosity question. On the outskirts, I guess the southern edge of the
At Pick.
Is that a local?
What's the third question? Number three, I think it is successful. I think the mall is going well. Did you all hear what he said? On the edge of Oshkosh, just a matter of a couple of blocks by the way the bird flies from our home, is a mall. It's a shopping mall. Not a large one, because Oshkosh is only a town of 12,000 people. But it's called ACTPIC. And ACTPIC, A-T-P-I-C, means all things possible in Christ. I think we probably are unique. Probably there's another mall in the world that's named like that. What was your first question? I think his question was, I want to tell you something about ACTPIC, though. It's locally generated. It's by a man who was in the steel business in Oshkosh, supposedly financially successful by world terminology, a professing Christian. Not always. He had professed to be saved a few years ago. He is with one of the holiness groups there in town, and the mall is built on a piece of ground than his. Now, it all sounds nice, and I wish I could stop right there, but folks, this is just to prove a point. That man, one of his sons who was in the family project, tried to build a home that must have been in excess of $200,000. And the thing is sitting there with weeds growing up around it because he didn't do what the Bible says. He didn't sit down and count the cost first and then build. He started to build and then found out he didn't have enough money to finish. And he never completed that project. That's a bad testimony in the town. Another bad testimony is that family is constantly in conflict with the people, with the city fathers. They're always arguing about something. He is also having trouble with a local bank in a lawsuit. Would you mind if I put it, I mean, just where it ought to be? His testimony, STINKS. It stinks in Oshkosh. That doesn't help the rest of us a bit. I'm very happy with the mall. It looks nice to people who come to town and say, what a beautiful thing, a nice mall with a nice little chapel. Nice little chapel where you can go sit and read, meditate, get married, weep, or whatever you want to do there. But the testimony of that family in town is bad. I was down in Missouri, southern Missouri one time, and somebody found out I was from Oshkosh. And he said, oh, you're from the town where? And he mentioned this man's name. He said, you know him? I said, yeah. And then he just let me out with a verbiage of stuff about that man. He had absolutely no time or use for him because of business dealings. We had people who came to our assembly who worked for him, and he gave them nothing but a raw carrot all the way through. He's a stinker. He's a first-class stinker. But goes to a holiness church, gives a lot of money, pulls a lot of strings, has a lot of clout, and it doesn't make it good for Christianity in our town because people associate Christianity with that kind of stuff and it makes it bad for all of us, right? I wish I didn't have to say that. Okay? I guess our time is gone. Did we answer all your questions?
Yeah. Okay.
But I think that's a good point. I think it's good for people to know that sometimes things look good on the surface and you get underneath them, they don't look so good. So what I really would like to just to cap off with that is say, make sure that your testimony undergirds your words of mouth and your other actions. Otherwise, it's not going to be effective for God. And there is a man who professedly had money. I don't think he has as much as he thinks he has. I think he's just playing big with somebody else's money.